everybody's figuring it out for themselves. We did our own report last year, and the big takeaway from AI use in product marketing was governance. Governance is the real unlock. If you're, I think 88% said that they expected it to rise, but use of AI to rise, but only 15% had real governance and had a real embedded track for how it's going to actually be used in the organization. So as you get folks continue to ask to learn on their own without guidelines, you're going to continue to see everybody learning in real time publicly, which is a real opportunity for product marketing leadership to demand that there's governance and learning across the organization and also within their own department. That's something that we did at our last offsite in a couple of months ago, was very hands-on sessions with just those tools, seeing how different people work through it, building best practices based on different ways that people approach it, hitting token limits, all of the classic things that we're hitting right now. But the big takeaway from all of this is still governance. If the team is all figuring it out by themselves, these little things like the framing that you mentioned are going to keep slipping through.
Hello, and welcome back to Product Marketing Life. Today, I'm joined by Tom Crist, principal and head of consulting practice at Fluvio. And Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I am pumped to be here. I'm pumped to talk. And yeah, it's going to be good.
Awesome. I just realized I was so busy introducing you, I didn't introduce myself. I'm Sid Kayton. I'm a staff product marketing manager at Lumaps. But hopefully everyone knows that by now if they listen to the other episodes, right?
Hopefully so. But hey, there's always a first time listener. So
yeah, exactly. All right. Now it's all clear. We've set the table. Tom, can you start by just telling us a little bit more about yourself? What do you like to do for fun?
Yeah, sure. I live here in Dallas with my family, which is my hometown. So my fun, boring fact is that I'm not a transplant here, but like so many others. I actually grew up here. Yes, different neighborhood, but now, you know, I've just got my own family here, doing my best to stay active. Mostly that means staying on top of a very active 6-year-old daughter, make sure she's having a great time, and trying to impart as much pop culture junk knowledge as possible so that she's equipped for, you know, whatever conversation comes her way. But I've always been an endurance sports guy. We'll probably talk later. I even used to work in software and payments for the industry, although I've recently been told that I'm retired from running, which is my big life change, thanks to what I've begrudgingly come to accept as old man spine, old sports injuries, all of those things. So kind of try to lean into swimming and cycling, and maybe there's a nice little through line to change management in there somewhere. But yeah, it's a little bit of an inflection point. We got to leave that behind. And then finally, I don't know how many of our listeners are dog owners, but we've got our first bloodhound. It's not our first big dog, but it's our first big hound dog. And now I realize if you have one, you kind of know what I mean. There's a lot of energy and activity to get out. So
nice.
Staying busy.
Yeah. I have a lab pet, but I don't think that compares to a bloodhound. So
it sounds like they're all very, you know, lovey-dovey dog though. So that's fun.
Yeah. Scared of everything, but yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah, you kind of alluded to it, but you can go off the books as well. What's a non-marketing skill or habit that's actually made you better at your current job?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you two answers to that. One is reading to kids, and the other one is being kind of a high-strung, anxious guy. I don't know if that's a skill or a habit, but I feel like it still hits. Reading isn't new. Reading to kids is over the last few years, and I always am reminded of a former CPO that I used to work with that he talked about when he's giving a presentation, when he's talking to customers, he tries to think about the cadence of how he presents and the way that he presents in a way that he would have read to his old, maybe like elementary school age kids. And so when that was a time period when we had a lot of virtual user summits, call it five, six years ago, and everybody was stuck at home. And that was some advice I took then. And now as I'm actually doing that more on a daily basis, it helps me think about how are the ways that I'm speaking to other folks and presenting what we're doing and talking about in a way that isn't talking over someone's head, that's really clear and easy to understand, doesn't make a lot of assumptions. So there's one thing. The other one is that, again, questionable if it's a skill or a habit, but I think anxiety helps. Yeah, there's a risk whenever you're presenting something and you're being viewed as the expert, as many prop marketers are asked to do, that you get something small wrong. And you can either build trust, you can kind of keep your trust neutral, or you can kill it, which is unfortunately way too easy to do. And you know, a little red thread of a narrative that doesn't quite go through, or a typo, or maybe a customer's name is spelled wrong in something, even an internal presentation. It's just kind of that little death of this, that, there, and the other. And I found that over time, just being overly critical is of everything that we put forward, whether it's an internal presentation or a customer facing item, is just an opportunity to make sure that we're as buttoned up as possible, because that's where trust lives.
They're great. They're unique. And I resonate with both of them. The first one, I don't have any in my own kids, but when I read to my niece, you know, I start to feel that same feeling. It's like, wait, how do I make sure this is engaging, relevant, you know, for the audience? And the second one's really good too. I would love to do a survey and understand how anxious most PMMs are, because
I think it's going to be high. Unfortunately, it's probably not great for health and mental health, but it does help.
Yeah, the amount of times I've like looked at the same slides, I love that. Like, yeah, even a typo, right? It just loses trust. If you're working with your customer success team and you know, show up like that, it's all of a sudden it's like, okay, you know, I don't know if I can trust this person all the time. So you're right. That's a really good point. Awesome. Well, yeah, Tom, would love to hear a little bit more about your journey into product marketing, your career. Can you walk us through it?
Sure. I think what's not going to be maybe a unique item is that I kind of fell into it. Like so many stories on this podcast or other networking events, I was super lucky. In the mid-2000s, when I was in college, I had the opportunity to get a prop marketing and prop management internship at Telstra, which is their Australia's largest telecom, used to be the government, big organization. So I got to do, from a prop management standpoint, some competitive comparison and B2B product offering comparisons, and then go to market from the product marketing side as I split that up. So I didn't really know a lot about it at the time, but I kind of instantly fell in love with it and said, that's what I'm going to do. And then I graduated right in the middle of the recession, which was everybody's favorite time to find a marketing job, and also perfectly dates me, figure out what year that was. But I kind of clawed my way back in through sales, which is something that I use every day. Content editing, which as I just mentioned, you've got to be really critical about everything that goes out. Something I use every day. Then some general and partner marketing roles before I very intentionally basically secured the right to create a prop marketing role at the organization where I was, which is in the digital publishing space. And I really haven't left since. Got to have several eventually leadership roles in payments registration. I mentioned the health and fitness and endurance sports space, other things like enterprise automation. So the big thing that I want to draw on outside of current experience for this conversation is the fact that I got to really, frankly, early on, get to set up three different types of prop marketing organizations, one of which was consolidating some talented but really disparate folks independently operating across different segments within the organization. And really, if you were the product team or you were sales or you were other people and you interacted with product marketing, you got a totally different experience depending on what segment or industry you were talking to. So building a charter, getting everyone working the same way was super important. Secondly, building one from the ground up after PE acquisition of an organization, like marketing hire number two, build the whole function, define what it is. And then finally, in that enterprise automation space, we had a really strong senior team of product and customer marketers who unfortunately were just tagged to content creation. So we said, what can we do about that to make a real function and focus on the strategy side? So really three chapters there of building teams. And that's something that I feel like I use every day.
Very cool. And now you're at Fluvio. Tell me more about what it's like in your role now. What do you do that's exciting?
Yeah, sure. a few things there. Number one, I get to continue to lead a team, which I'm super passionate about. That was really a non-negotiable piece of whatever was next for me at the time. And by extension, I get to work with and learn from dozens and dozens of some of the most forward thinking product marketers and product management leaders and marketing leaders. Right now I lead all of the consultants at Fluvio. We're a, as far as we know, the only FTE only consulting firm. I set the best practices, the ways of working, and participate in a lot of our consulting engagements, which also gives me the opportunity to go crazy with context switching. All day long, which is something that not everybody enjoys, but I get a big kick out of. I mean, we get to help organizations tackle a big investment in product marketing to accelerate go-to-market. So it's a, I think I'm lucky and fortunate to have the opportunity just to chat on a daily basis with so many smart people.
It's really cool. So with like leading a team, and I guess I'm going to assume you've also had to recruit.
Absolutely.
DMMs. Okay.
Yeah, we actually have a dedicated recruiting service as well. We're also PMA consult and PMA recruit as well on the back end through partnership. But we own our own recruiting side of the business, which, as you can imagine, is a pretty strong parallel to investments in product marketing and setting up the right go-to-market frameworks and executing on the work. You know, obviously that typically comes with building a team around it. So there's a lot of compliments in there. So yes, sorry, long answer, but yes, done a lot of recruiting as well.
Oh yeah. When it comes to, you know, bringing on stellar PMMs, what do you look for? What are some of those skills? What are some of those mindsets?
Yeah. So it's really changed over the last few years. People like myself that have worked in a lot of different industries used to have more opportunity than they have now. Really what's becoming non-negotiable with a unfortunately wider available talent pool is not just the product marketing basics, but industry expertise as well. We're seeing it's harder to get into junior roles. I mentioned the internship earlier. Whenever I see a product marketing internship, I'm always engaging, commenting, trying to get exposure out, because I think those are such important early stage opportunities, and that doesn't really exist anymore. Just like I know some of the folks you've had on this show said, they're transferring in from customer success, from sales, from other marketing roles. And the number one thing that you want to see from those folks, outside of knowing the customer and the buyer out of the gate to a degree, and having the product marketing basics, is a real focus on the strategic things that we want to bring to the table from the knowing the customer element. So is this a person who's going to jump in with both feet and start making materials and making everybody really happy? That'll probably keep you happy for 6 months. And then in a year, they're going to be hiring for that role again if they're not really investing in, if they're not someone who's obviously very interested in really investing in customer research and listening to gong calls and going out to events and being part of a team and really, again, being a trusted expert on the industry versus being the table stakes expert on what prop marketing can and should do.
I like that. I remember when we were talking before this, it was like you're talking about how the so what is dying, which I thought was a really interesting perspective. Yeah, can you tell me more about that? Like, when did it start dying and what does that look like?
Yeah, it's something that we talk about a lot internally and with some of the organizations that we're working with. It's so easy to make things now. It's so easy to have your AI tool of choice help you build a deck, use deep research mode to build a presentation, use all of these or to build a research, do all of these things that generate a ton of content and don't actually have a deep point of view. And I think it shows up first in internal presentations, but it's most dangerous in what actually hits customers. If you're delivering a 30-page research report, I'm sorry, nobody's reading it. I don't think there's detail that's important, but I want to make sure that what we get through in the first three slides or the first two pages of something that we bring to the table, is something that's actionable and something that's informed by actually understanding the market and understanding what's going to resonate with them versus the sea of sameness that we've always been fighting against, but it's just getting worse and worse. It's easy to be polished now, which is such a boon for so many people. It's so easy to make something look trustworthy by being tightly written and well laid out, but it's really hard to balance the ability to do that fast with putting in the work to make it something that's going to actually resonate and something that buyers are going to care about.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have like more content being created, but lower attention span. So it's like a perfect storm. And then you have like the fake synthesis, right? Where it's like, it's not this, it's that. And it's like short sentences, but yeah, it doesn't really communicate much.
That's out there. And, you know, it's funny. I was not even joking, just this morning looking at a services company's website that was framed in exactly that way. It was, your problem isn't this, it's that. This is the real inflection point. It was just, it made me upset looking at it because I knew exactly how it was created. And the truth is about AI use right now is that it's still an individual sport. Everybody's figuring it out for themselves. We did our own report last year. And the big takeaway from AI use in product marketing was governance. Governance is the real unlock. I think 88% said that they expected it to rise, but use of AI to rise, but only 15% had real governance and had a real embedded track for how it's going to actually be used in the organization. So as you get folks continue to ask to learn on their own without guidelines, you're going to continue to see everybody learning in real time publicly, which is a real opportunity for product marketing leadership to demand that there's governance and learning across the organization and also within their own department. That's something that we did in our last offsite a couple of months ago, was very hands-on sessions with just those tools. I mean, seeing how different people work through it, building best practices based on different ways that people approach it, hitting token limits, all of the classic things that we're hitting right now. But the big takeaway from all of this is still governance. If the team is all figuring it out by themselves, these little things like the framing that you mentioned are going to keep slipping through.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes sense. And it seems like, you know, what we're heading to is a lot of change. We're actually experiencing it now. Lots of change. So from like a product marketing standpoint, like how can PMMs embrace the change and make sure that they are, I don't know if the word is future proof, but are continuously evolving
and
growing.
Future proof is a tough one, but change is going to be constant. Everybody's feeling it. Personally, we deal with a lot of change because we're working with organizations that are trying to affect it within there. But really, change is ultimately permission to redraw the scope of what you're working on. Change is happening for whatever, whether it's new tools or whether it's new focus for the org or whether it's an adjacent market you're trying to move into. That's something where you have the opportunity to define, you as a product marketer have the opportunity to define what your role is going to be in that, to make suggestions, to not wait for instructions to come to you, but again, to lean on being the strategic input to what needs to happen and not just stay in execution mode and end up getting measured too late to matter on a vanity metric of number of pieces produced or salespeople enabled or whatever the case may be, but actually making a mark on what the change is or how the change is executed.
Maybe just either reflecting on past experience or current experience you see with PMMs, like how does this play out? Like how are you seeing this show up in your work and even previous work?
I think it's about, there's a gap between when product marketing is actually brought into decisions versus how strategic people say product marketing is. Again, going back to some research and revenue impact that we did earlier in the year, I think about 40% of leaders that we surveyed said that product marketing crop marketing was viewed as being a strategic part of the business, which is low separately. We can talk about that. But at the same time, only 1 in 10 said that they were brought in early to strategic decisions actually being made. So I think there's a perception gap currently for product marketers where we feel like we're at the table, but are we really finding out late about buy-build partner decisions? Are we able to inform early on the problem that we're trying to solve and what we're building for? I think that's the biggest piece that differs between what's felt today and what's actually happening in the room.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, even in Trillette, I think the third chapter was, you have to do this, right? To summarize, PMM is kind of like a content, you know, whatever, production house. How did you go about changing that perception and going upstream?
Yeah. So there's a few elements to that. I'll focus on the two that I think are most important. One, it's writing it down and socializing. The product marketing charters can be 3 slides. They can be book length. I've seen a lot of different variations on that. But again, getting back to the so what point, getting people to care about what product marketing should be bringing to the table and writing it down and doing a roadshow of it is super important. Secondly, for the people involved on the team, it's not an analytical thing. You can do the analysis of what we should be doing versus what we're doing today. Maybe that takes a few days or maybe a couple of weeks of conversations, but it's emotional because team members are not doing what they're doing for no reason. They've arrived at that point based on the forces that have moved them there over time. There's, you know, it's identity, it's turf, it's letting go of the old goals and the old organizational priorities and getting aligned to something that the leadership team is hopefully actively and frequently promoting out the organization of, this is the changes happening, this is the new focus area that we have, or the new buyer that we're going after, or the big bet that we're making, and making all of the change that you're trying to affect as a prop marketer within prop marketing ladder up to that and try to take the emotion of, we're doing this because it's mattered deeply in what's now an old world, off the table as gently as you can. You mentioned the 3 sort of turnaround elements that I was involved with early on. Every time the team was strong, there was no, oh gosh, we've got to replace the folks we have. It was never the goal or the intention or the outcome of what we did. It's how do we get people working on what matters so that when either we've got some headwinds and we need to think about team composition later, or whether hopefully we're on the growth swing and we decide where to invest, that product marketing is seen as totally invaluable either way.
How do you do some of this, like you're saying, when you enter a new, like even at Fluvio, how do you set the stage? Is it like, even as a, you know, FTE, you show up, someone on your team shows up and says, here's the charter, here's what I'm doing. As an outsider looking in, like, how do you do that?
Yeah. So we've got it down to a science, but it's not complicated. Is what I would say. It's 3 elements. It's reading in context and being a complete sponge as much as we can on all of the async things that we can do. It's talking to 15 to 20 people within the organization, which is similar to the roadshow you do with yourself. If you came in listening to what their pain points are, understanding how product marketing relates to it today. And the third piece that's a little bit more quantitative than perhaps everybody has access to is we have a go-to-market assessment as well, where we take a look. It's a survey. It's hefty. It takes about half an hour to go through that we'll do with organizations to see where their strengths are and where the investment opportunities are. And oftentimes there's an equal element of confirming suspicions and identifying areas that, for whatever reason, whether intentional or not, aren't being served right now. So to answer your question, it's taking an objective look at what exists today from a research, enablement, collateral, product vision, everything else under the sun standpoint. It's talking to people and it's putting numbers against it that we can come in and make decisions and prioritize against.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of inputs. You know, someone might take those inputs, throw them in AI and try to find some level of synthesis. But what makes human synthesis and like product marketing synthesis different and valuable when it's done well?
Synthesis is, can we say it's deciding what matters and throwing away the rest from consideration? Again, AI is an awesome thought partner for this. It's great at swizzling things together, and it's amazing at giving you a really milquetoast answer at the end that doesn't really apply to the real world situation we're in. So it's something that we absolutely use. It's something that you'd be remiss if you didn't. But the judgments that you're going to put forward on how you want to move forward and the claims that you want to stand behind, you've got to be absolutely bought in and know the depth and detail that goes into that recommendation that's being made. We're, again, not to be cheesy, but also this morning, we're sitting in with a CMO and her team on a message testing readout from speaking with prospects. And we could have delivered the deck async and read through it, but the deep questions that come out of that and the internal knowledge and synthesis that was done to understand the underlying details behind who's maybe just a cranky interviewer and what are some of the determining factors that go into a certain level of resonance with a certain piece of messaging. I would never trust Claude to come out with that, and especially not in the moment. And having defensible recommendations that we can go super deep on and that we can be behind because we are an expert on the buyer as a prop marketer are things that are just not replaceable. And we've got to decide what matters, what resonates, what's differentiated, and there's just no replacement for that. There's a big moat for us around that versus I spun up 10 agents yesterday and now I've replaced my prop marketing team.
That's good news for us, right? With this process, and I think PMMs, as you're saying, I mean, even going back to the anxiety thing, it's very important that we build that trust and like have something that, like you said, is defensible, and we do a good job of defending it when we're on that call, when we're on on those high stakes environments. How do you coach your team to do that best and show up confidently?
Sure. It's something that happens every day. It has to be part of your everyday. I think back to, call it like 2010, I had a ton of Google alerts set up. So I would get news on the industry that we were in at any given time and not have to do that. We've come a long way from Google News alerts in the ability of what we can monitor and synthesize on a regular basis. So whether it's just a baseline of competitive monitoring and industry monitoring, all the way up to making sure that some of your KPIs are associated with speaking with customers, listening to sales calls. Again, this isn't rocket science, but the story is changing every day. What buyers are struggling with is changing every day. And we can't say we did awareness research 2 years ago and that's good enough to go on. It's got to be part of every day, even as an embedded consulting team within an organization. That's not on our statement of work, but it's something we have to do every day to stay informed, credible, and effective. And it just goes doubly so for someone that's within a given organization.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So consulting across all these orgs, I'm sure you get to see a lot of patterns, but what some of the companies are going to, your buyers are going through. Is there anything that like kind of swims to the top?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Everybody is very interested in making sure that they're providing real impact to what's going on. I feel like it's something that we've touched on repeatedly through this conversation, but there's a lot of maybe call it concern, maybe call it anxiety going back to that. Of am I keeping up? Things are getting easier to ship. Things are getting harder to sell. Messaging is getting muddier and muddier as, we're starting to see the same pillars show up in AI messaging as we saw in SaaS messaging. With SaaS, it was my product saves time. Snooze, who cares? With AI, it's I'm keeping human in the loop. We do a lot of AI messaging work now, as you can imagine. We're keeping a human in the loop. Our data sources are the best. All of these things are okay. Maybe it worked a year or two ago when people were just figuring this out, but you're hitting the sea of sameness. So the concern across organizations, to more sort of acutely answer your question, is we're trying to figure this out along with everybody else. Is it unique? Is it defensible? Is it differentiated? Is it maybe not future proof, but at least the next 6 months proof, where I can go, I can enable my team, we can do event messaging, we can do everything else under the sun that goes downstream from this in a way that's going to move the needle and actually affect pipeline. Everybody's got a big target to make the most out of all the generally AI native investments that product is making. And I think that we are going to hit the end of any complacency that exists around not seeing real dollar results come from that. So that's what people have in mind. And it's almost becoming a little bit of a cliche to hear about, hey, we're working on AI messaging. And even some conversations that we're having, people are front loading the conversation with, well, just like everybody else, we're trying to figure out our AI messaging and trying to joke out of it before we start.
That's so true. I actually love what you said. Am I putting you on the spot? So feel free to be like, said, I'm not giving you my secret sauce, but with this AI messaging, like you're saying, it's like human in the loop and our data sources are the best is just like everywhere. I see it all the time. You know, I have to internally, and then also with some of the clients I work with, like it's so hard sometimes to convince leadership and others to be like, no, we got to break out of that box because we're going to sound like every other person. We have to find that unique differentiation points for the market, from what's compelling to our customers, where the product strengths are, where the competitor weaknesses are. How do you go about doing that? What is the better alternative to some of these cliche terminologies or messaging pillars?
Yeah, it's not complicated and it's not easy to do. And it's really focusing on what are buyer pain points, what are jobs to be done, what are outcomes. If we're talking about saving, if we're talking about real savings in billable hours they've got to make to another organization, if we're talking about processes that have real collapse in time frame and time to value, those can still be a little bit generic, but you can tweak that into what your aspirations and job to be done are of your buyer. So it sounds different. All this AI messaging piece feels a little bit different, but I mentioned the comparison to the sort of SaaS cliches that we've dealt with for 10 to 15 years. That's something that we actively talk about because people relate to that as well. So when you think about telling it to an executive on the team, for example, of why this messaging may or may not be compelling, that's a good foil to say software saves me money. Software is one source of truth. All of these things that we've heard that they don't care about are a good foil for what's now becoming just sea of sameness noise on the AI messaging front.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just table stakes, right? It's like, yeah, of course you're a cloud company. Of course you check the boxes on these basics. Like we have to move past that. Very interesting. Yeah. Thank you for entertaining that. I feel like I would not have asked many guests that question because again, it's a tougher one.
Everybody's struggling with it. There's no silver bullet, but it's not as scary as it sounds. It's the same root solves that we've always had.
Yep. Yeah. So you go back to the basics, you know, really thinking jobs to be done, understand the market, understand your customers, you can get to something differentiated.
100%.
Tom, this has been great. We covered a lot of ground, change management, AI messaging, team building. What I like to do for the last few questions is kind of just, I have two of my favorites and I always get a fun answer. One of them is product marketing is blank and you fill in the blank.
Stick with our theme. It's deciding what matters. There's so much noise out there. If you want to be a strategic partner, you don't want to be the person word vomiting a long description of everything under the sun. You want to help people understand what matters, why it matters to them, and what impact it's going to have. Super simple, hard to do, but really requires you to absolutely know the table stakes. Who's the buyer? What's the process they're going through to buy? What are their pains? What's the product? What's your team? What are their strengths? Be the expert on that. Be the glue between it. And that'll help you decide what matters.
Love it. How can people learn more about your work and what you're doing at Fluvia?
Yeah, sure. Hopefully pretty easily. We're pretty active on LinkedIn as my easy to find us there, or on our Fluvio Marketing website if you want. We've got a lot of team members that are always pushing out content. That's one of my big things as well. Always on everybody to make sure that we're pushing out some really interesting pieces. Those are all available there. You can see all the authors and the rest. We just pushed out, as of date of recording, our annual report on hiring. We've got some AI go-to-market pieces that are related to some services we just launched. That's all out there and available. And I'm on PMA Slack. I found my current role through PMA Slack. I'm an ambassador for our Dallas-Fort Worth section. I do a lot of, I've done the Austin MC job and done some PMA Leader Summits. And then finally, you know, we've got, even later this week, we'll be at the New York Summit. We'll be at the London Leader Summit. So we're out and around with PMA as well.
Very cool. I'm getting a FOMO already. I'm going to have to miss it this year, but as you heard it, you should be at the summits and check out what Fluvio is up to. All right. Well, Tom, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.
Till next time.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.